The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
But did anything go through your head at that moment? Was that you saying, right?
That was me saying, this is the first time he puts the ball in the fine, and thank God I did something half decent with it.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
It is 7:57, time for us to turn our attention to the takeover at Newcastle and what happens next. Luke Edwards of The Telegraph is with us. Luke, you're away from the Ireland beach just as it's starting to get interesting. All those years watching the bad football. Oh, were you? Ah, very good.
I was thinking about this the other day that, I was there for the Euros in 2016, which was a little bit better than what's happening now. But yeah, it seems to have turned a bit of a corner to Stephen Kenny. I'm really pleased for him.
We're back.
And long may it continue. I haven't been over for ages. I haven't been over since 2019,
right.
Which is obviously partly to do with the pandemic. And partly to do with the fact that Ireland have not been very good. So we haven't been sending, but hopefully that will change. I do miss Dublin. I'm not sure whether the Irish media pack are particularly missing me, of course. But
We miss you, Luke. That's what matters.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm really pleased for him. And it's really, really, really interesting to see how that unfolds over the coming months.
It turns out your local beat has got a bit saucier and a bit more interesting too.
Yes, it has. Yeah. So I live in Newcastle and over in England, and this has been my patch for 20 years, and suddenly I'm covering the richest club in the world. So happy days. I should be quite so flip about that, really, because obviously there are concerns about the Saudi Arabian owners, and I think we always have to be mindful of that, but I think for the time being, and I think I will be mindful of that whenever I'm reporting on the club, moving forward, I will always be mindful of those human rights issues and who the owners are and what the regime are. But for now, I don't think anyone can, no one would really begrudge, not really, Newcastle supporters being overjoyed. And most of that joy is about Mike Ashley leaving. But they've got their club back. That's how it feels. The city is absolutely buzzing. And Sunday's game against Tottenham is going to be some occasion. It really will.
You've been reporting today about the possibility of Frank Lampard being in the mix for the managerial job. We were just chatting about this a little bit earlier on. Is there a world in which Steve Bruce is given the job until the end of this season and allowed to see out the year for fear of the upheaval that a new manager and five or six signings in the winter transfer window will have? Or is that pie in the sky?
I think it's pie in the sky, and I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday. If Newcastle had held on at 2-1 in injury time against Southampton, and if they had converted one of their many, many chances against Watford, and they had four more points on the board, and they weren't in the relegation zone, so two wins out of seven, and a few couple of, and a draw, that would have been a decent enough return. And then I think in that scenario, perhaps they could have just kept Bruce on, because there wouldn't have been quite the same level of animosity towards him, and the league situation wouldn't look quite so dire. And then I think that would have actually bought them a bit of time. And there is a lot of pressure on them now already, the new owners, to get this new managerial appointment right. So Frank Lampard's name is in the mix. Lucien Favre's, the former Borussia Dortmund manager's name is in the mix. But they've taken over a football club that they didn't think they were going to get until next year at the earliest, the consortium. So they've come in. There's a lot of names in the air. I don't even really think they've hardened up a shortlist of who the manager will be. So it's all a little bit chaotic at the moment. And that's really the sense I've had over the last sort of 72 hours, is just how chaotic it is. There's a lot of people trying to make their voices heard in and around the consortium, let alone in it. They've obviously got three directors, the chairman from PIF, Amanda Staveley and Jamie Rubin. They all have people advising them. So it's a little bit chaotic at the moment. But no, I think Bruce will go this week. And I think that clean break is probably the right thing to do, because he is so unpopular, so disliked, that I think it would just sour the sort of feel-good factor a little bit if he was to come out or lead the team out of the dugout against Tottenham. It's a little bit sad for Steve Bruce, because he's done a job that the old owner needed him to do. And without Steve Bruce keeping Newcastle in the Premier League for the last 2 years, and they could easily have gone down, and lots of people said they would go down, he's facilitated this transfer going through. And I'm sure he would have liked to crack it off, working for different owners at his boyhood club and the job he'd always wanted. But no, I think they'll have to bring in a new manager. And I'm of all the names that have come to me, the more I think about it, Frank Lampard makes some sense to me, because they need somebody who knows the Premier League. He's a young manager. He's a big name. He has pulling power because of his name as a manager. He can grow into the job, but he's not that elite level manager. He's got a point to prove. He would take the job if it was offered to him. I'm absolutely sure about that. And they need to make a swift appointment. And I think Frank Lampard actually ticks a lot of the boxes. You can throw Eddie Howe's name into there. I think they'll go for a manager who's out of work, just because it speeds up the process and becomes a lot less complicated. But we shall see. They haven't even finalised or hardened up who they're going to go for yet. So, as I say, it's all a little bit chaotic. But I think they'll appoint a manager in the next 10 days, 2 weeks, I would hope.
In the here and now, Luke, who is a better manager, Steve Bruce or Frank Lampard?
Oh, what a question. Well, Steve Bruce has a proven track record of getting teams out of relegation. He's also suffered some relegation. I'm sure Newcastle fans who are listening to this would scream at me if those words came out of my mouth. But he has kept Newcastle up for 2 years with this squad. And, you know, the chance for him to be able to improve the squad in January, you would expect he would be the safer, really, if I'm being honest, he'd be the safer bet. But it's just gone to the point of no return with Newcastle United supporters, rightly or wrongly. It's been building up for 2 years. And Frank Lampard would come in with a clean slate. And I think the job, I'm sort of avoiding the question there, defining it. I think I would be happier if Steve Bruce was manager in terms of keeping Newcastle up. But having said that, I think Frank Lampard did a far better job at Chelsea than he's given credit for, actually. I think, yes, Tuchel came in and won the Champions League with that same group of players. But we also have to remember the job that Frank Lampard did in his only full season there, which was take a squad, a very, very young squad, blooded a lot of these young players who Tuchel has developed and improved, and got them in the Champions League. So it wasn't exactly a disaster start when he was sacked. He was just a victim of what Chelsea are, and they've probably got the most ruthless owner in European football in terms of changing and chopping managers as soon as results dip. So he's got a point to prove. Yes, it's a risk. Of course it's a risk appointing someone like Frank Lampard. And I'm not saying it's definitely going to be Frank Lampard. It could go for Eddie Howe, but Eddie Howe's at Bournemouth now. So all these managers that they're realistically able to get, they've all got black marks on their CV because that's the nature of where they are. Even though they've got new owners, Newcastle are 19th in the Premier League, second from Boston. They're not going to be a law, really, but an attractive proposition for the really elite level managers. So they're going to have to go and get somebody with a point to prove who's had a bit of failure in their career and a bit of a flaw. And I just like Frank Lampard. I think he just ticks a lot of the boxes for what they need at this particular time.
Well, he's certainly going to bring attention, and he's going to take everybody away from the ownership, and people will start talking about him and talking about the football again. So there's a big win there, as opposed to even somebody from abroad who might be better qualified, because at that point it's just there's less of an emotional tie to the manager than there will be for somebody who is a national hero like Lampard. Can I just ask you as well about the chaos behind the scenes? I totally understand that this has happened much quicker, and so that's how the business works. Presumably they have some idea who they want to run football operations, who isn't the manager, a transfer policy, anything like that. Is there any sense that somebody will be a steady hand on the tiller in terms of the type of footballer that they're going to buy? Because the transfer speculation this week is off the charts.
Yeah, I think Frank McPartland is involved. He was in recruitment at Liverpool, Watford, Burnley, Glasgow Rangers, vastly experienced. I think he's working for them in some capacity already. I think he may get some sort of role in recruitment, because obviously along with the manager, that is, as you've just said, that is the, you know, they've got to plan for the January window, so they need someone to be doing that now. We're heading into mid-October, aren't we? So there isn't that long to get a list of targets, and I think it is chaotic. Yeah, I think he could come in terms of a sporting director of football. Again, a bit like the manager, there isn't anything concrete in place. There's a lot of names circulating, a lot of people pushing different people. I think the manager will come in before the director of football and the CEO, the new CEO that they want. Again, those two appointments really are probably arguably bigger than the manager long term, because they're going to be in charge of running the football club, including, you know, assessing the manager in the future. But they need to get a manager in now. They can't let this drift. They can't just have a caretaker manager for 3, 4, 5 games in Graham Jones, because you could easily be cut adrift, and the pressure is on. I keep saying that, but the pressure is on. They've got to get this decision right, because if they don't, they're going to be the richest club in the Championship next season. And that is a real danger. This squad has fought against relegation for 4 years since promotion back to the Premier League. It's never been clear of the, particularly clear of the drop zone until the end of the season, or comfortably clear of the drop zone until the end of the season. So it's a limited group of players, and they need someone who's going to come in, lift everybody, but also has that knowledge of the Premier League straight away. So I think they've got to go for a manager of Premier League experience. I really do.
Is Brendan Rodgers a real contender at this point, or is he the type of person who'll wait and see exactly how things shake out and make sure that the director of football is somebody you can work with, make sure that the chief executive is somebody you could work with?
I think that's a really good assessment. If I was Brendan Rodgers, I would be tempted. I really would, because it's just beginning. He's going through his first difficult spell at Leicester, isn't he? Vardy's not getting any younger. He's kind of won the FA Cup with Leicester. There is a sort of question, perhaps, can he do anything more with them? And he's having this sticky spell. But I think that, like a lot of managers, they will want to see how the cards fall, how this shapes up. I think he might be tempted. That name has been circulated. I think he might be tempted, but probably just a little bit soon for him, I would have thought, to leave Leicester, where he's got good owners, good infrastructure, a good squad, and sort of jump at the first sign of a sticky patch to go to Newcastle. I don't know. I wouldn't rule him out entirely. Certainly wouldn't rule him out entirely for all the reasons I've just said. I think he would be tempted, but I think it might just be a bit too soon even for someone like him.
I have one last one. The arrival of big money into any club has traditionally seen that club splurge wildly in the transfer window and not really get value for money. So my favourite one yesterday was Manchester United might be willing to offload Lingard, Bailly, Van de Beek and Martial in some kind of buy four for the price of three deal. And I presume everybody else in the Premier League is looking at this going, oh yeah, you can definitely have my reserve team players.
Yeah, exactly. The four players you've just mentioned at Manchester United, they would all still vastly improve Newcastle from where they are. So, a lot of players would improve Newcastle from where they are in terms of the squad they've got. So, yeah, they're going to have to be... It's interesting because they can spend £190 million under the terms of financial fair play rules because of the lack of spending under Mike Ashley. So that's a hell of a lot of money, but I do notice immediately that has emerged into the public domain. There has been a definite pushback from the new owners suggesting that they won't be spending anything like that amount of money in January, which suggests that they're already very conscious of the fact that if they're going to go to these clubs, they're going to get ripped off. January's not a great window to do business in anyway. You always have to pay a little bit over the odds in January to get your main targets, but they're going to have to be wary of that sort of thing and then sort of plan accordingly. I don't think they'll get anywhere near to £190 million in January. I think they'll probably come out and make that point publicly before the window opens, just to guard against all the things you've just mentioned, because you can waste a lot of money very, very quickly in recruitment if you just sort of don't plan it and don't think it through. But they definitely need new signings. I mean, I would say they need at least five new players in January, which is a lot to do in 1 month.
Well, we are very excited here to see Jeff Hendrick keep Donny van de Beek out of the team and Kieran Clark keep Eric Bailly out of the team. It's going to be great to see in the second half of the season. Luke, just one final thing. The arc, I mean, this is a very speculative question, but the arc of this club towards the expectation that they will challenge for Champions League places, how many years do you think it'll take? Do you think it'll be a slower build than Manchester City, for example?
I would give it 10 years, personally. Right. I mean, I really would. I don't think you should be expecting Champions League football. I mean, I know Amanda Savey talked about between 5 and 10 years. Now, the problem for anybody when you say that and the way the media work is everybody reported within 5 years winning Premier Leagues. And I don't think it will be that quick. But who knows? The Saudis, they did not buy this football club to bob around in mid-table. So they may well get impatient. They don't want to. They're probably not going to want to hear 10 years. So, a lot is going to depend on them, ultimately. It's their football club, really, despite all the shenanigans about separation. It's the Saudi Arabia football club, the public investment fund football club. So it will be very interesting to see. I think they'll want to certainly be in Europe within the next sort of 3 or 4 years, I would guess. And then you try and win a trophy first, whether that's the Premier League. I don't think it really matters. Man City won the FA Cup first, didn't they? I seem to remember. So Newcastle won a domestic trophy since 1955. So I think those things are possibly achievable in sort of 4, 5, 6 years. And I think that will be the kind of timescale But it is more difficult now. There's more top teams. There's more elite teams. It's not the same as when Chelsea and Manchester City did it, because you've already got Chelsea and Manchester City ahead of you now. So it'll be very... I think it'll be tentative at first, and they'll talk a lot about long-term, then eventually, at some point, I suspect the Saudis will intervene and say, right, we want to get this ball rolling properly now, and we want to win things, because they don't want a mid-table Premier League football club. That's kind of pointless thing for them.
Luke, we've got to let you go, but is Alan Shearer involved somewhere? Is it just an ambassadorial role he has?
I think he'll be, I think he'll take an ambassadorial role and advise them a little bit. I think that will happen probably initially in a sort of informal, ad hoc basis. But I think at some point, once he can sort of marry that with his other work commitments, I don't think he wants to stop doing Match of the Day over here, for example. So I think at some point that will be formalised. And I think that makes sense, because the one thing they lack is local knowledge, and there's nobody knows Newcastle United better than Alan Shearer, having spent more than a decade there playing as club record goal scorer and growing up in the city. So that is a very sensible decision for me.
Luke, great to have you back. Thanks a million. Cheers.
See you soon. Take care. Cheers. Bye.
It's Luke Edwards of The Telegraph there, giving us his thoughts on the situation at the takeover of Newcastle by the Saudi Arabia, essentially. I think we can all agree that that's what's happened there, and it's going to be that constant tension. How much do you talk about the human rights abuses? How much do you talk about murdered journalists and LGBTQ rights? And how much do you talk about Donny van de Beek potentially going as part of a blockbuster 100 million deal?
When you mentioned Brendan Rodgers there, he will go from a place of winning the FA Cup, where he picked up the owner and spun him around on the field, cradled in his arms, to a club run by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, where I suspect that, yes, there might be more FA Cup trophies hanging in the trophy cabinet in Newcastle in 10, 15 years' time, but there will be fewer dances with the owners, I suspect, on the pitch. He's gone from a wholesome situation to a less wholesome situation, or he would do, were he to take this job.
Yeah, unless the owners end up becoming quite public over a period of time, and that's how this whole thing works.
But they're not, unless, you know, maybe the PIF really is separate and the chairman of the PIF just turns out to be a good guy, and that's what we see all the time. Whether or not we're going to see Bin Salman there.
If you're Man United, though, you're looking at all the turkeys in the dressing room going, right, I can just bundle you all together and get you off my wage bill. And I can have four of my kids come in and play 15, 20 games this season. And I can take my 100 million in cash and bank that. And then this summer, there are a lot of strikers available in the transfer window. What do I do?
Yeah, you look at that and it's like an interesting time to be having this conversation, because Manchester United might well have to start with Phil Jones and Eric Bailly this weekend. And they've already got rid of Axel Tuanzabi to Aston Villa for this season, so they've done a bit of damage in that. The injury has actually come to fruition, and these players may actually have to play. One thing, like you said, is that McFred have been available, and Pogba has been relatively available. That we actually haven't seen Van de Beek needed as much as maybe he was signed to be. So, like, maybe Manchester United look around at their squad depth and say some of these players are genuinely our next man up, and they need to make signings that actually replace them too.
Yeah, so maybe they are next man up, and that's what frightens me, and that's why I'm taking 50 cents on the dollar now, cashing in and buying better younger players,
yeah,
who are squad players and who are announced as squad players, as opposed to somebody gets a full page ad in a newspaper from his leaving club because he's so good and so special. I'm kind of vaguely surprised that Ajax didn't retire Donny van de Beek's jersey. They loved him so much. But it's been one of the most underwhelming signings in the history of English football. And if anybody's offering you any money for that right now, you're like, oh yeah. I mean, no matter what Solskjaer says in public, they must be like, can we get any of this money back? Can we? Can you give me any money for this?
It would be a win for everybody involved, because you suspect that full page ad in the, I don't know, the Amsterdam Observer or whatever it was it was in the Manchester Evening News. It was in the English press, sorry. That's probably worth something still, and Van de Beek, you could still get a handsome enough fee for him. And from Van de Beek's perspective, he'll definitely feel
that he's some football.
Yeah, and he's good at football. I mean, that's why you take out a full page ad, isn't it?
Do we know he's good at football? Are we sure?
I judge my footballers by the size of the ads, not by the size of their talent.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.